Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody. Did I shout right there?
No, not too loud.
You got our attention. You woke us all up.
Wow. Yeah, you don't need to be boring, so I'd rather be
I got my earpiece in. It sounded like I broke my eardrum right there with that first part of that. All right, welcome back. I'll do an NPR. Welcome back, everybody, to today's Issues on American Family Radio.
We need some violin.
Now people are leaving the show, I think.
Huh?
I think people might be leaving the show now.
If I read a book like this, you go to sleep in about 10 minutes, right? All right, Ray Pritchard joining us from Dallas. No more going back under the desk fixing those wires, right?
Yeah, I was just checking during the break. Everything's, you know, the signal's flowing good. So whatever was kinked is now unkinked.
Okay. They were a group, weren't they, in the 70s?
Yeah, the Kinks. Yeah, they were good.
I think Steve they were knows all about it. Alternative band or something like that. All right, Walker Wildman, Tim Wildman, Ray Pritchard, Ray's in Dallas. We're in Tupelo, and our good friend Steve Jordahl is with us from American Family Radio News and OneNewsNow.com. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, and whatever else, I do feel welcome.
Yeah.
Loudly. And, but, I do feel welcome.
Oh, because you feel like I did shout. Oh, right
no,
there.
No, I just, it was, I'm as welcome as I've ever felt on okay. This program right now.
All right. Welcome, Steve. Welcome
Thank
to the program.
You,
we're going to turn it over to you now.
It's Steve. Good. Yes, it's all we yours. Have some news.
Okay, you have some news?
I have some news.
Okay. Sounds like you lost your best friend right there.
Oh, well, I'm doing the NPR thing.
I have some news. Okay, go ahead. Let's get back to non-NPR. I like it better. Go ahead, Steve.
Right.
What do you got in the news?
Tomorrow is a really important day at the Supreme Court. Every day that the Supreme Court argues a case generally has bearing on this country in ways that we don't always recognize at the time. But tomorrow, a particular case is coming up that really does have some legs that kind of affects everybody. The case is the United States versus Miller. And they are going to try to determine if cell phone location towers and the ability of the police to track where you are should fall under the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment, of course, is the amendment that protects against unreasonable search and seizures. So if you have your cell phone on you, basically, if it's on, the police can track where you are because it's always continually pinging cell phone towers, and they triangulate, and they can find with a pretty accurate where you are at any time, in your home or anywhere. Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, the police used this without a warrant to catch a guy that had been involved in multiple robberies. They triangulated his case, where his cell phone was, and he was in that in the location of every robbery that happened in the spree, and they convicted him of it, and he was sentenced to prison. And he sued, saying, "You can't look up where I am at all times. That's it's unreasonable search and seizure." Mm-hmm. Very interesting case. I know you've been following it too, Walker.
Yeah, this is very interesting, and it's one of those cases that that in some way affects every American if you have a cell phone. So, yeah, the thing here is that the court will be deciding, and they'll not sure how they'll decide this, but they'll decide essentially, can law enforcement, and when they're investigating a crime, can they access the data on your location on any given date without a warrant? Which that's the major thing here, because
right.
Traditionally the law enforcement goes and gets a warrant from a judge for certain data, and
right.
then they get the data from the provider or whatever, and there's no really, I don't know anyone who objects to that. Maybe
right.
some do.
Right.
But for the most part, that's been accepted practice. But this is a whole different ballgame, because it's accessing this information without a warrant, which means the police don't necessarily have to have reasonable cause or anything other than we would like this individual's
right.
information.
Right. And there's been a history with this type of information, and of course it started with the telephone. And the police said that they wanted, for example, they could go to Ma Bell back when Ma Bell was a thing. I'm dating myself, I know, but they could go to Ma Bell and they could say, "Listen, I have a phone number here. Can you tell me what numbers it contacted?" Now, the court has ruled, the Supreme Court has ruled, in fact, that that does not constitute unreasonable search and searches and seizure.
Yeah.
Because it's not the content of your phone conversation. Mm-hmm. It's just the what a third party, which is the phone company,
right,
did to connect your calls.
Isn't it then just a short hop, skip, and jump to saying it's okay to do what the police did then?
Well, that's what the government is arguing. The government is arguing this, but the defense is saying it's a little different in the age of the cell phone because, first of all, when you pick up the phone and dial a phone, you are doing a proactive thing, and you are, whether you realize it always at the time or not, but you are in a contract with Ma Bell. You are affirmatively saying, phone company, I want you to connect me to this person, and that mm-hmm. is a transaction that you instigate. If you have your phone on you, just in your pocket, you're not instigating anything.
Right.
And the cell phones are, the towers are still tracking you. Mm-hmm. So the line grays a whole lot as you get there because I, you know, don't necessarily want the government to be able to know where I am at all times just because I have my phone on me. And everybody always has their phone on them at all times and is generally on.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty, I think it's a very interesting case.
And the whole thing here is without a warrant. Without a warrant.
Without a warrant.
Because there's no question, if you've got a warrant, then it's perfectly legal to do that, right?
Well, sure, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I lean on the side of needing a warrant because or you're going to have to show me, I'm saying me, if I'm a judge, for example, yeah. who's hearing this case, you're going to have to show me that the police had to have this information immediately to keep something from happening really
right.
bad. In other words, an emergency situation that couldn't wait. And I understand that. But start tracking somebody by using their cell phone without a warrant seems to me a little police state-ish.
There you go. Tim Wildman siding with the criminals.
Well, I'm siding with the Constitution.
That's the whole debate. Especially
in this day of technology, we're torn on privacy versus security.
Well, the whole quote zone of privacy used to be huge, right? 150 years ago, it was huge. Go anywhere you wanted. Unless somebody saw you with their own two eyes, they wouldn't know. You know, we mm-hmm. talked today about going off the grid. Well, 150 years ago, that was not hard to do. Today, it's virtually impossible. The whole notion of personal privacy, because of technological advances, the zone of privacy has almost completely disappeared. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the court is not going to say something, rule very narrowly, and say in this case it was okay, but you still need a warrant in most situations. This seems to me like the kind of case they may split down the middle to give a very that Judge Roberts often does that, you know, give a very narrow decision instead of some broad sweeping decision.
Let me ask you this. By the way, if you're listening to this program, the program is called Today's Issues, and it's on the American Family Radio Network, AFR.net, on the internet. We're 184 stations across the good old U.S. of A. Appreciate you listening. And you can access the video live stream of our show at our Today's Issues Facebook page, where Walker also posts the stories that we're talking about. I've mentioned this before. And it's related to what we're talking about. And I don't know how this happens exactly. But when I fly on airplanes.
I thought you had
well,
to
that's an important qualifier there.
I need to be clear about that before people think, I got to hear this one right here. And what kind of drugs he's taking. When I fly on airplanes and you can turn on your iPad, all right?
Right.
And you can go to maps, or you can go, yeah, maps. And the blue dot will be blinking all the way from wherever you're flying, from Washington, D.C. to Memphis, Tennessee, which is my, mm-hmm. how I fly. I fly that route a lot. And I'm often going, how in the world It's the GPS tracker. Yeah. When you're not even hooked up to the internet is what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So have I got this right? The internet, Walker, GPS is following my iPad without an internet connection?
Yes. Well, here's the thing. Apple has their own satellites, or they rent space on satellites.
Right.
And that device has a pinging GPS that is recognized by that satellite. So they can see you with you don't have to be on the internet per se for them to see that device.
Which puts us in a weird situation. The government may not know where you are, but Apple does.
Right.
And this is the difference in these two cases. The cell phone tower pinging, which is the basis of the Supreme Court case, is not nearly as accurate as the GPS is.
Right.
And some people want to draw a line and say, well, okay, so if you put me within a quarter mile or, I don't know, 600 square yards of something is different than being able to put me within 10 feet. Mm-hmm. And they want to draw the line there. But no, that's...
Okay, that explains it then. Somebody explained that to me a year ago, but I acted like I understood, but I didn't because I didn't know how that is.
Yeah.
But so it's the Apple's tracking me with their own satellite.
Yep.
Even if I don't have an internet connection.
Yes, and when you...
That's kind of spooky, though, when you don't know.
Yeah, it is
spooky, and when you... when those 100-page user agreements...
that
nobody reads.
You read the first paragraph, or you don't even read it. You just click agree. Because here's the thing. It's not like we have an option. We can't petition Apple to change their user agreement.
Right.
You know, there would have to be a large
outcry.
If
they're going to track me, I mean, they're going to be bored.
Well, here's the difference.
I'm not James Bond here.
Right.
But I'm just saying it does seem a little weird.
And the difference as well is that Apple isn't keeping records of every time of constant motion.
Right.
Your cell phone might be keeping the record if they can get into it. But it's not like the phone company, which actually keeps records of what their towers do.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go back and reconstruct where someone was on April 15th or whatever.
Right.
They can't do that with the phone and your GPS because Apple doesn't keep. Can you imagine with...
No, you have no reason to.
Half a billion phones out there always knowing where everybody... That would just be ridiculously...
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. So that case is being heard today before the Supreme Court?
Tomorrow,
okay. What's next, Steve?
You guys remember James O'Keefe?
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy from that did all those undercover videos.
Project Veritas?
Project Veritas. And he was he exposed the Planned Parenthood baby body parts scandal. Well, he seems to have been at work in Alabama. And apparently he had one of his undercover agents out, and they posed as a woman who had said that she had an affair with Judge Roy Moore when she was younger and that he got her pregnant and that she got an abortion. And she was trying to shop this story to the Washington Post in hopes that, it appears, that the Washington Post would publish a story that was false and that they could entrap the Washington Post into some nefarious reporting, some fake news.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Post didn't report any of this because they couldn't verify it because they were being journalistic about it. And they followed this lady back to New York where she walked into the headquarters of Project Veritas and she was found out. So that to me maybe crosses a little bit of a line in my
book. Well, I mean, if Project Veritas shouldn't have got busted. I mean, and it proves that the Washington Post has good vetting, journalistic vetting exercises.
Shouldn't have got busted because they were foolish to do it in the first place? They weren't good enough at it or what?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things. If Project Veritas somehow did pull that off, everybody would be lauding them for their investigative journalism. But at the same time, this one turned on them because Washington Post didn't fall into the trick.
Did not. They did their job.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't let the Washington Post off completely in this Roy Moore story either. They've been there's been a couple of those women, one or two of the women who said Washington Post aggressively went after their comments or their.
And here's the elephant in the room.
I get maybe they feel like that's their job. I'm talking about, but the Washington Post is liberal.
It is.
They want a liberal senator from Alabama. They don't want Roy Moore. They have a political agenda, as well as they are a news agency. Now, whether they report accurately the news or not, you need to understand they have a political agenda at the Washington Post, and it's to get more Democrats into the Senate.
And this is the elephant in the room that everybody, the conspiracy theorists, would want to say that the Washington Post made up these women who made this accusation against Roy Moore. And we already know that one of the women who was not one of the people that the Washington Post exposed, but the one that was with the lawyer,
Gloria Allred,
has been fairly well discredited. But so far, I haven't heard anybody discredit the Washington Post people. So it's up to you whether you want to believe that the Washington Post is pushing and pushing. But this story with James O'Keefe would seem to indicate that they're doing some solid journalism.
I agree with that. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
So we're getting the Washington Post 10 seconds of credit. Let's move on.
All right. I just want to – a couple things.
Good for them. Move on.
Okay. Hey, how about something from, let me see if I can find my notes here. I want to do something from the Snowflake Files.
Hey, 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 Snowflake.
Snowflake.
My pretty little Snowflake.
Who's that now?
This is.
Who's the singer?
Oh, that's, you've got me.
Jim Reeves.
No.
No?
Yes.
Marty Robbins?
Jim Reeves. Yeah, it was Jim Reeves, I think. So we have a tenured professor at Florida Atlantic University. His name is James Tracy. He was fired because in his private email or social media posts, he said that Sandy Hook Massacre, where all those children in Sandy Hook at the elementary school were
about 5 years ago or whatever it was.
Just awful. And he said that was staged by the government in order to take away all their guns. And that was so far beyond the pale and so hurtful to the parents of these young victims that the university fired him. And he is now suing the university, saying that his First Amendment rights were violated. So here we have another interesting case, actually. You know, Walker, I don't know if you have an opinion on this one, but can you – we already know that it's wrong to say something dangerous, like fire in a crowded theater. Mm-hmm. But – can you just say something plain stupid that might be hurtful? Is that protected?
Well, I'm not going to weigh in one side or the other on whether his comment is accurate or not, or whether it's inappropriate. But beside that, I think that folks should be able to say things that others may think are outlandish and inappropriate and hurtful, without losing their First Amendment rights. But at the same time, the college is his employer,
right?
And they can pick and choose the employee conduct.
Well, so, you know, my question is, if he was tenured, I mean, that's a pretty high wall of protection. How did they fire a tenured professor?
There is a process,
right?
By which
I mean, there's a way to do it, but it's pretty unusual.
Well, that's part of his lawsuit. So, and Walker, to your point, they are his employer, but they take government money in the form of student
That's
loans
right.
at least.
That's
so
right.
It is the government interest in doing this.
Yeah.
But it, obviously, if you have a professor that says something like Sandy Hook was made up or 9/11 was a conspiracy, it makes your college look bad.
Well, and here's the thing. Here's the double standard, and the reason we even bring this up for discussion is lefty liberal professors say outlandish things. It seems like every week, and they do outlandish things, but they get protected, sheltered, and their colleges defend them. But someone like this says something that others might disagree with, and he gets fired. I think we either need to have colleges either need to be a First Amendment zone where you can say whatever you would like, and if people don't agree with it, that's fine. We can debate it. But it needs to be one or the other. We don't need to be firing people like this, but the liberal professors who say awful stuff too keep their job.
There you go. I want to bring you a story from, and this is, folks, if you've been following the debate here about our anger management file music, Ed Vitagliano did not like the music that I had the other day. So I have brought some new anger management files music in. This is from the anger management files.
There's always a place for the angry young man with his fist in the air and his head in the sand.
In this case, it happens to be an angry, it was a driver of a van who decided he didn't like President Trump. So he was driving his van. The president was in his motorcade. He tried to cut the motorcade off.
Oh, man. Oh,
from,
no. Oh, no.
While he was in Mar-a-Lago, Florida. He literally drove his van and tried to block the motorcade.
Oh, he's lucky he didn't get shot.
Well, and this is why
work out for him.
This also this also applies under the Dumb and Dumber files.
Don't know much about history.
Because the guy was promptly arrested, as you would think.
Wow.
And he follows several people have been showing their displeasure at the president on the road. But
I'm with Ray though. You start messing with the president's motorcade with another vehicle. You're lucky you're alive, sir.
That's a good way to get shot.
And not only shot, but you think of how much the beast, which is what they call the president's car, how much that weighs. It is literally a tank on wheels.
Right. Yeah.
And nothing you're driving, no SUV.
B is going to do any damage.
Well, and I also, on this same trip, I saw a picture of a lady riding a bike.
Yeah.
And throwing the middle finger to the president. I mean, that's so disrespectful.
Well, a lot of people agreed with her because she raised, and this is from a British newspaper, says she raised £43,000, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of $60,000, $50,000 to $60,000 for her defense, because she was also, I don't know if she was arrested or not. But
no,
they gave her money. She was fired from her job.
Yes, that's it. That's
she was fired from her job. I have one more thing for you today. And Ray, I want you. Do you sleep well at night, Ray? This isn't a moral question.
I was up most of the night last night.
Well,
so.
You might want to tune in to this company. It's called AXAPPP Healthcare.
And we'll write that down.
All right. And what they did is they have some artificial intelligence. They trained a computer about music, and it composed a lullaby. All on its own. This is, and I'm going to play you about 20 seconds of the lullaby that was composed by an artificial intelligence computer.
This fits well with our NPR theme.
It does fit well. This may be from the sleep files or something.
I need to take a nap.
What do you think? Would that put you to sleep,
that
right?
Would put me to sleep. I don't know how they did that, but that was very restful, wasn't it?
Well, they showed the networks, the computers, a large body of sheet music, and through training, it reached the point where it could take a short sequence of notes as input and predicted which notes were likely to follow. It was trained on sheet music in computer-readable format. It learned elements of music like melody, harmony, rhythm, and structure, and it did its thing.
I say man alive, robot alive.
Robot alive.
So what's going to happen is that it's going to play this over all of our devices, going to put us all to sleep.
All to sleep,
that
right?
Is when the computers will take over the world.
That's right.
And we won't fight because
we'll
be
asleep. The day after tomorrow.
That's right.
Are you writing a novel or is this going to be a movie coming out or what?
Coming soon.
Maybe that's already been done. When the robots take over the world.
There's plenty of movies and books about robots taking over the world. And in fact, some people are actually taking robot artificial intelligence threat very seriously.
Very seriously.
Hey, can a robot exercise for you?
That would be good.
I like that.
Huh?
Can a robot diet for you?
A robot diet for you? Will you do a research on that?
I will. Please? I'll let you know.
Just don't get water on the keyboard.
Okay.
Good point.
Duly noted. All right. Thank you, Ray. Good to have you on with us today, brother.
Thanks, Tim.
All right, folks. My thanks to Walker, Steve, Fred, and Brent. Brent doesn't talk, but he runs the control board for us.
Couldn't do it without him.
Absolutely. And thank you for listening to the program. Or watching on our Facebook page. We shall see you back here tomorrow. Take care, everybody.